Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Directed by Hassan Oswald and executive produced by Emma Thompson, this award-winning film is an incredible story of resilience. Medea, a 15-year-old Yazidi girl, roams the field surrounding a refugee camp in northern Iraq with a camera making intimate, poignant video diaries. Captured by ISIS and sold into sex slavery at the age of 9, Medea was traded among 4 different men. While her mother went missing, her younger brothers, Adnan and Ghazwan, were also enslaved, and her entire community systematically murdered by ISIS. It's a very powerful film. It's called Medea, and we're joined today by the director, Hassan Oswald. Hassan, welcome to Film School Radio.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on.
What a powerful film. What a remarkable portrait of a young woman who we see for over a long period of time in her own ability, whether she understood what she was trying to get to or not, is such a compelling figure. Such a story in the middle of the wilderness. How did you find her? How did this come to you?
Yeah, I had been interested in the story of the Yazidi people since 2014, when genocide was committed against them by ISIS. So that was sort of the seed that of a story I wanted to tell. In 2018, I read an article that, you know, while the world had sort of moved on from ISIS, everyone had just thought they were defeated and gone. There were still at the time 3,000 Yazidis in ISIS captivity. So that sort of lit the spark of something, you know, it just told me that now was the time to tell this story. I went over and had been very interested for a while in the power dynamic between filmmaker and participant, because forever it's been heavily on the side of on filmmaker. And I wanted to figure out ways to rebalance that. And I thought handing the camera to the participant could be a way forward, but I knew that's a big ask and it had to be someone special. I met Medea through her brother, actually, Ghazwan, who you see in the film, charismatic, and he shares that same sort of lovely spark that her and her siblings have despite what they've been through. So I met him first and he introduced me to his family, and sitting in the corner was little old Medea, smiling and joking already and very curious with the cameras. And so I just thought, you know, I had a good feeling that she would, you know, at least be interested in the idea. And I gave her the cameras and her brothers the cameras and taught them the basics, set them loose for a week. And when that footage came back, you know, we were blown away, but of course also heartbroken, because right away she started using this camera as what she calls now a therapist before she knew what a therapist was. She didn't have any friends. She didn't have anybody to confide in. She wasn't allowed to talk. And so that camera sort of became that.
When this film started, it was reminding me of that wonderful documentary film from several years ago, Five Broken Cameras. And you're absolutely right to have the sort of perceptive outlook that she has as she's walking around, interacting with her brothers, with her, the people around her in her life. It's pretty clear early on that she is aware and that she has an understanding that of what not only what's happened to her, but her family. And she's able to contextualize it in ways that seem to be beyond her age.
Yeah. Yeah, that's she understood and had depth in describing what had happened to her, in it's just how you just said, ways that beyond her years. And of course, a lot of that comes from what she went through. She had to grow up very, very fast. But I think it's also inherent to who she is, her soul. She is a very deep thinker. She's very emotionally in tune with herself. And I think that character came through in the film. But it also speaks to a girl who now continues to thrive. She's here in New York City going to school. That was just the first baby steps, that film. And now she's sort of spreading her wings and you know, she's taken over the world. So she had that within her from the get-go. And it just sort of grew stronger and stronger as we progress in the filmmaking process.
I certainly want to talk about the wider story, her family story in the context of ISIS and the impact it's having and still has to this day, the Yazidi people. All of those things are important, but I fear, and I know for a certainty, that her story is not unique in the sense of the violence that's been visited upon her. But thank God she is who she is because she is a wonderful messenger for it. I don't know how much I feel comfortable describing too much of the film here. I want to, you're my guide in this regard. I don't want to get into too much detail with fear of giving away too much. So let's talk about the broader picture of her family, what happened to their family, but also the Yazidis. The Yazidis are in many ways, and the Kurds themselves in general, are the most, what we would call in the West, the most progressive in that region of the world. And they have been severely, severely isolated and punished over the many, many years. So that's a pretty broad question, but let's talk a little bit about the broader story of her family in the context of ISIS.
Sure. And I guess, and you know, stepping back just to touch briefly on what you were saying, yeah, the Yazidis are a minority within a Kurdish minority within a country that struggles generally. So the Yazidis within Kurdistan and within the Kurdish population within Iraq, within a region that struggles with a lot of these issues. Yeah, they have a very tough time and have had a tough time. This is, by their count, the 74th genocide committed against them. What happened with her family? So just briefly and not giving too much away, but her and her family were taken captive by ISIS and sold throughout the region to different parts. They were all separated, her and her three brothers and her parents. The men and the elderly and disabled were killed and dumped into mass graves. The women and girls were sold into sex slavery, and the young boys were sold as caliphate cubs or child soldiers. So Medea's family was absolutely obliterated along with her community. The diaspora of the Yazidis is very strong. I was just in Germany, and that's the largest outside of Iraq. So when ISIS came through the region, they sought to destroy these people. Well, of course, the genocide ended 10 years ago, this past August, actually. As Medea says, the genocide continues because there are still, you know, 250,000 Yazidis displaced. Those who are not displaced within their country, they are part of the diaspora and live abroad. You cannot convert into Yazidism. You cannot marry into it. So in a way, I fully understand how Medea says the genocide is ongoing. This community is really, really struggling.
I do remember at the time that the Yazidis were under attack by ISIS. And it seems to me, I recall them living sort of in a mountainous area. And there were these daily reports about how ISIS was moving up this mountain or this area of Iraq towards them. And just sort of the helplessness of that story, how it was excruciating. I remember, and correct me if I'm getting any of this wrong, but it was just unbelievable in real time. I remember this pretty vividly.
Yeah, and that's the scenes that did make it into Western news. That was Mount Sinjar. That's actually where Yazidis are from, Sinjar. So when ISIS came through, they all fled to this mountain and ISIS encircled it. It was the middle of the summer and thousands died of thirst, hunger. And then eventually the Obama administration opened a safe passage for them to get out. So Medea's family, when they tried to escape to the mountain, their car stalled. So that's why they were captured, but why many other Yazidis managed to escape. So yeah, that was 10 years ago, briefly on our news. And that's what everyone remembers, that sort of encircling of Mount Sinjar by ISIS with Yazidis trapped and dying atop.
I want to talk about, again, without giving more away than we should, the relationship she has with her two brothers, Adnan and Ghazwan. Wonderful relationship that she has. In some way, she's the oldest of the family. And the way that she interacts with them, the way they interact with her, is a beautiful thing to watch. They're young boys and they're rambunctious and all the rest of it. They do what they do. But her ability to be an adult, revelatory and heartbreaking at the same time.
Yeah, she had to, as she says in the movie, she was changing her brother's diapers when she herself was 9 and taking care of her brothers because her parents were gone. She had to grow up very, very quickly. And it, you know, it's very interesting and humbling to see her now day to day in New York. She still carries so much of that strength. But as you saw in the movie, she was not ready to be a mom and she's not ready to take on that role with her brothers right now, or anyone for that matter. So yeah, the she was put in a tough circumstance and it certainly molded who she was, but she does see that that was potentially very damaging to her and traumatic. And as you saw when she reacts to the her mother's video, her mother's wedding video, and she says, "I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be like that." So yeah, that was something no 9-year-old, no one should go through. Definitely no 9-year-old, but she's sort of, as she does with everything, has emerged in this resilient, incredible fashion.
Amazing. Amazing, that video. I want to talk about that in a second, but I do want to remind our listeners we're speaking with Hassan Oswald. He is the director of this incredible documentary film, Madiha. That video we see of her mom's wedding, or parents' wedding, I should say. Wow. Could you tell by looking at Afaf that she'd rather be anywhere but there? I mean,
Yes.
that was really something to watch.
And Madiha, so Afaf was 19 in that video, and Madiha is 19 now, and they are pretty much twins. So that's an even more heartbreaking parallel to draw when you realize that this is what her mother went through when her mother was 19. And of course, just physically, they look like, identical twins. So it's definitely the most emotional scene for Madiha to watch in cinemas. It's turned her whole, she sits into all the film festival screenings. So she's watched it 100 times. And she explains it as a furthering of her cathartic and healing process that started when she started filming. And now it continues. So now she actually likes watching those scenes of her family and her old town. So it's sort of turned into something else, but it's certainly tough for her to watch those scenes when the movie was first finished.
Let's talk a minute about the family that remains. I assume that a lot of the people we see in the film are still in Iraq. Is that correct?
Yes.
Her
So only
brothers?
Medea. Yes, only Medea is out of Iraq currently.
So, how are her brothers doing, Anan
They're
and?
good. Yeah, they're good. They're in school. They're happy, healthy, safe. The problem is it's Iraq. There's no opportunity for them. There's no future for them. So, we are working on a way forward to improve their lives. They're good.
Now, the stability of Iraq, the stability of that region of Iraq, because in the film we see that, and I didn't know, that there are still tens of thousands of ISIS members and families that are not very far away from this part of the world, part where they grow up. How is that situation? Can we give a geopolitical kind of analysis of, is it better? Is it the same? Is it what? How are we doing?
Not better. It has stabilized, of course, since the Iraq war. Of course, I'm not a this is not my field. From being there, they are an incredible people, generous, loving, that have been dealt a really, really tough hand. As far as the ISIS footage in the footage of that ISIS camp in the film, that is, Washington Post is a piece on it, New York Times did a piece on it, Al Hol camp. It's a ticking time bomb. If there will be a coming of the second caliphate, it's what they call it, or a second coming of ISIS, it'll come from that camp. They're in a very delicate, precarious situation, not to mention the issue between the Kurds, the Turks, the Kurds and the Iraqis. It's stable, in my opinion, but sort of balancing on a knife's edge, as it has been for a long time.
About how many are in that Al Hol?
At its peak, a 250,000.
My God. This is a very powerful film. It is a lesson in the kind of the meta world of geopolitical history and political science. But it's also really about people who found a way to survive. And in the case of Medea, she found a way to thrive. It's a really amazing story, amazing. Yeah, there's so much about it. I'm kind of at a loss for words. It's really a very powerful film. And my congratulations on your work. Well, we've been talking with the director of Madea, and we've been speaking with the director, Hassan Oswald. Oswald, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.